Opus is brought to you in part by Gregory Giles, an investment advisor representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City. Legacy has been serving the financial planning and investment needs of clients since 2004. More information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at 712-587-8070. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services member FINRA, SIPC. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network. The Sioux City Symphony performs again tomorrow night for an evening of symphonic dance after a performance just a couple of weeks ago.
It's kind of a quick turnaround. Maestro Ryan Haskins, the music director and the conductor for the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra, is here. And welcome to Opus this week on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Steve Smith, sitting in for Gretchen Gondek, who is under the weather this week. But we wish her the best and just like to say hello and welcome to Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Steve. Good to be here.
Oh, nice to have you here.
Yeah.
And get a little bit of kind of stretch our legs out here and talk a little bit longer than our normal kind of morning edition
slot.
Yeah. We've got a big not only orchestral show, but it's a big dance show as well this weekend with the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra. A dance Higginbotham is coming to town. Tell us about that group.
It's
a dance troupe, obviously.
It is. Yeah, it's the the interesting story sort of behind how this all came to life is, if some people might remember, that this was one of the last programs that we announced last season. The main reason why is because it is such sort of an unusual partnership. Not that music and dance are unusual, or even dance with orchestra is unusual, but finding the perfect balance of the company and what we're planning on here in Sioux City. So, you know, there were other companies that we were approaching all at the same time, along with John, with the Dance Higginbotham. And everyone, you know, has their worlds of comfort. But in the end, it came down to John and his brilliant dancers, you know, in their sort of motto, it's all about collaboration for them. And right up my alley, collaboration that stretches outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as we began to sort of discuss what was on the table, it was pretty quickly realized that this was going to be the perfect fit. Modern dance in Sioux City, modern dance in many cities is not something you always get. We traditionally think of ballet and orchestra.
You'll throw the Nutcracker on at Christmas.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this will be truly a unique experience. Also, to add to that is, we'll be featuring them in two works on the concert. The first work, there'll be the troupe of five dancers who will be dancing to Erno Dohnányi's Serenade for Strings, and that was originally written for trio. But was reorchestrated for the entire string orchestra a few years later. And so it's for those listeners who are familiar with that trio, which is really quite beautiful, this sort of filling out of the ensemble is really well done. And it's the first time that this company has danced this music in this capacity. Their choreography is called Angels Share. That's their dance name for this particular combination of the Dohnányi and their dance choreography.
Was the piece originally written for dance, or was this added later?
No, this is something that John Higginbotham is known for, taking on these types of projects, taking on repertoire, some familiar. There have been some projects with the National Symphony in D.C., with composers like Lalo and a couple other more Latin-focused dances with tangos and such. But he's got a really amazing way of allowing the musicians and the dancers to collaborate on stage at the same time. So, you know, I've seen this in trio form. The choreography will be similar, of course, but with there's a big difference between three musicians and the dance company and, 30, 35 and a conductor and a dance company. There are little adjustments that we make along the way. Obviously, tempos are quite important to matching that what they have set. That's a little different than matching tempos in ballet, at least from the conductor's perspective. It's really been a wonderful experience so far. The rehearsals are, you know, to see these people just dancing their heart out, it's really inspirational. So the audience, I think, is going to enjoy it so much.
So you've worked with the dance with the troupe already?
They came in Thursday night.
Okay.
So it's going to be a great weekend. That first piece on the first half will feature these amazingly talented young people. And we'll get to see John's choreography right there for us.
So John Higginbotham, the namesake of Dance Higginbotham, how many people are in his troupe, or how many are coming to the Sioux City event?
So there'll be a total of 5 dancers.
Okay.
The troupe, I think, has it.
However many it needs
to
have.
Yeah, it grows and evolves, I think, as according to what the works are. That it should be said that to be part of his dance company is it's a true feat. It's a very sought after group based in New York, and the talents. You know, John was from the very famous Mark Morris dance group. That's where he sort of had his big career, and so a lot of his approach to choreography is reflective of that style. For those who know that style in the dance world. So it's great to see someone who was in that world and now is inspiring the next generation of these young, creative, vibrant artists. And we probably next will want to talk about the extra collaboration that we're doing with them that takes us into the second work on the program.
So should we play that one right now?
Sure, let's do it.
Should we announce what that work is, or should we play it and then kind of back announce it?
Let's play it first.
Okay.
This is Igor Stravinsky's Circus Polka, written for a young elephant.
A young elephant?
A young elephant. Okay. Not an old elephant, but a young elephant.
Well, the old elephants are less spry and prone to dancing.
Right.
Especially modern dance.
And when we come back from listening to it, I'll tell you about the phone conversation that Stravinsky had with Balanchine about this specific work.
Okay. Here it is, music of Igor Stravinsky, the Circus Polka, here on Opus.
Thank you.
And there we go with music of Igor Stravinsky and the Circus Polka, which will be performed this Saturday night. You can see it. You can hear it. Maestro Ryan Haskins is with me. Again, this is Opus. I'm Steve Smith, sitting in for Gretchen Gondek, who is not in today, but she'll be back next week. Ryan, let's talk about that piece a bit.
Yeah, so this is going to be featuring just one dancer, just an amazing, amazing dancer, Macy Sullivan. When we started conversations with John, we knew that we wanted to do Angel Share with the Dakhtani, because it's really a powerful work and a brilliant piece of music. But we wanted to do something else, something more appropriate to mark the occasion and our partnership. I always like doing that. If we can sort of not just, you know, have a nice review, have our notes, and that's what gets put into the history books, but if we can actually have something significantly musical out of the collaboration, even better. So we commissioned John to create choreography that would be debuted at this concert, and the work that we chose together was the Circus Polka.
Okay.
So it'll feature Macy on her own out in front of the orchestra, it's going to be a thrill. I mean, the piece itself obviously is a lot of fun. I talked about that phone conversation. You know, we know Igor Stravinsky's relationship with Georges Balanchine was incredible, all the choreography that they were able to create. And so one day, as the story is told, Balanchine called Stravinsky, and it's very specifically noted. So I'm not sure if someone is in the room or if it was recorded or if it's just retold this way, but it was Balanchine. So he says, "I wonder if you'd like to do a little ballet with me." And Stravinsky says, "Okay, for whom?" Balanchine's response, "For some elephants." Stravinsky, "How old?" Balanchine, "Very young." Stravinsky, "All right, if they are very young elephants, I will do it." So there you are, the Circus Polka for elephant. Now, if they were a mature elephant, perhaps this would not have happened.
I'm sure that would slow down your tempo a great deal.
Well, you know, we have to think about the debut of this. You know, so this was a commission to Balanchine by the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Oh.
They approached him and said, "Can you write a ballet, choreograph a ballet?" This is the circus. I'd say it again. Circus coming to the great choreographer. But these guys apparently really didn't have any limits. And he said yes. And then at that point said, "Okay, now I need to find some music. Why not go to my buddy Igor and let's create something?" So the ballet was performed at Madison Square Garden for 50 elephants.
50?
50.
Holy smokes.
And 50 dancers.
Oh, wow.
So 100 people were involved with this production.
Because each of the elephants has a handler?
No, they each had their own choreography.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were instructed, the elephants learned the choreography. No joke.
I wish
I could have been there. The cow elephant, which apparently is not offensive, but that's
that
what
would
you
be
call
a female
them.
Elephant.
Yes, the cow elephant named Modoc, I believe is how you pronounce it, was the principal ballerina of the elephants, and Balanchine's wife was the principal of the human troupe. Now we're not done. They all wore pink tutus.
Well,
all
obviously.
Of the elephants,
even the male
young
ones?
Elephants, right?
Right, yeah, they're young elephants.
So it happened, and it happened not once. The premiere happened around early '40s, so 1940-ish. Probably closer to 1942. It happened, and it was so popular that it happened an additional 42 times.
Wow.
After that. How many performances did Stravinsky attend? Zip.
None.
He never went.
How could you not want to see this?
So anyway, it is one of my favorite short little moments of Stravinsky. Throughout the week rehearsing this with the orchestra, it's so... for the listeners who are familiar with the suites, Stravinsky's suites for chamber orchestra, it's a lot like that. In fact, it probably could fit right perfectly in. It's short, so it's always difficult to program. So this is great. We have a program that suits it perfectly. And it's just such a great little gem that we're happy to finally bring to Sioux City.
No, so this is not the original Balanchine elephant choreography. This is totally new choreography by
John. Yeah, I honestly, I haven't had the conversation with John, so I don't know if he got a hold of that original choreography or not. if it takes inspiration, I might need to ask him about that. But
you might need more floor space.
Yes, right. Well, Macy is just the opposite of an elephant. So,
but if she has a partner.
Tiny but powerful. But gosh, I mean, what an incredible story. It's such a fun one, and it's going to be a great highlight of the night.
Okay, well, that sounds amazing. So this is music by Igor Stravinsky, the circus polka, and it's a one-woman show.
Yeah.
One-woman choreography done by Dance Higginbotham.
Single, very strong, incredible dancer. Macy's just unbelievable. So it'll be great.
Terrific. So what is after that?
Just a small little work by Sergei Rachmaninoff and his symphonic dances, his last sort of tour de force. And the whole program, you know, is named A Night of Symphonic Dance. And my concept going back was that we would be able to feature, obviously, dance in the physical form through our guests, but also feature the orchestra in some form of dance. That doesn't mean they're going to all of a sudden get up and start doing the mambo. But there are certainly aspects to orchestral music without proper dancers that we can, you know, relate to dancing. And if there's one work that I think brings that all together, it's this incredible last work of Rachmaninoff.
This is his final
opus. It is. Yeah, yeah. You know, Rachmaninoff had... his life is very interesting, and we don't certainly have any time to talk as much as we could about his life. But the days of Rachmaninoff weren't always bright. He did immigrate to America. In fact, this score is the only score that was fully written in the United States.
Hmm.
And you know, people think the great Rachmaninoff. I'm sure he's we think Russia, right? We think always back to Russia. Well. He lived in Long Island. He wrote this looking over the Long Island Sound. The premiere was premiered not by Russian orchestra, but by the Philadelphia Orchestra. Rachmaninoff's buried in upstate New York.
Huh. So did he defected?
I don't know if, I'm not sure if that's the right term. I think he saw what was coming. So the revolution was taking place,
oh,
right?
Okay.
In 1917, around that time.
So this was early.
Yeah. Okay. So he knew at that point that he needed to make his move and get on the way. And so we first see Rachmaninoff show up into New York City around 1918. So, already he had been touring as a pianist, composer, and eventually, he would be conducting as well. And his performing as a pianist was limited. In fact, he actually was, he protected himself against too many performances as a pianist. But as a composer, going back to sort of the darker years, as a composer, his first symphony really was a flop. It was based on a lot of traditional Russian Orthodox music. Thinking about Rachmaninoff as a flop is sort of a wild and crazy concept, because of just the incredible repertoire that we have from him. That stalled him out. You know, it threw him into a depression. It stopped him composing for at least 3 years.
It seems to be almost a theme among Russian composers. Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, think about what was going on. The other great thing about this program is we're talking about music, not just the Stravinsky, but the Dukhny. We're all talking, music that was living all at the same time. So that's, a little connecting piece there. But you think about people, or even someone like Prokofiev, who certainly handled what was going on politically in the homeland. You know, each person handles it differently. You know, you think the easiest one is to compare Shostakovich and Prokofiev. Mm-hmm. And there was a complete, you know, different way of approaching. One was a little more forward about it. One was sort of lived on and was a little more passive and wrote themes into his music and snuck them in as secrets, you know, and Stalin loved them. But he didn't realize that the piece was really, you know,
kind of a big
against Stalin. Yeah. Right. So but Rachmaninoff, I think he was a family man. He knew that he had to provide for his family. And so that immigration, the leaving, in addition to the touring that he was doing, the leaving home was an important step for him. I think, you know, just more of a family decision, to be honest. And so, you know, he comes to America and the Symphonic Dances is the only work that he ever would write that uses alto saxophone. Mm. He wrote, as what he did with a lot of his music, wrote everything at the piano first. And of course, the Symphonic Dances existed in a two piano format before it was orchestrated for full orchestra. So when he arrived, there's a great story about him arriving in New York and making the trip to Long Island. And in the car ride, the great Broadway arranger and sort of protege, assistant to Gershwin, Robert Russell Bennett, famous for, you know, some incredible musicals, was in the car with him. And Rachmaninoff was asking Bennett on essentially how to write for this instrument that he'd never written before. And that first dance that I'd love to listen to now, it features that very beautiful, famous saxophone solo. This was Rachmaninoff's first try. and it's one of the most iconic moments in symphonic writing from that time period. It's a beautiful one, the first movement of Symphonic Dance.
All right, we'll hear it next. This is David Zinman with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
and set one from Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances with me talking about your chance to see a live performance of all of those symphonic dances this Saturday night. So it's tomorrow night, the Orpheum Theater. It's Maestro Ryan Haskins. Hello again, Ryan. And I'm Steve Smith, and for Gretchen Gondek this week on Opus, Gretchen was feeling poorly. But we wish her the best. She'll be back next week here on Opus. So talk about the dances we just heard.
Yeah, so that first dance, originally Symphonic Dances, that name probably was, well, it most likely was not Rachmaninoff's choice. There's a great relationship early on at the start of the composition of these dances with Eugene Ormandy, who was with Philadelphia, who would end up giving the premiere of these dances in Philly. There's communication back and forth through letters and just in person. We see these relationships through time where composers come to conductors and conductors sort of dictate maybe more than looking back on it than we would have liked. You know, it would have been really cool to know exactly what Rachmaninoff wanted, but, you know, he was a nice guy. They were pals, and so he took his advice. Rachmaninoff's thought was that he would name it These Fantastic Dances, and then each movement would be titled Noon, which is the first movement, which we just heard, Twilight, which is the second movement, At Midnight was the third. Well, those names didn't survive. They're just marked with Roman numerals. And we have symphonic dances. So honestly, the music is really what makes this work, whether it's titled properly or not. It doesn't really matter, at least in my opinion.
And that was just Eugene Ormandy just kind of doing an audible.
Yeah. and you know, the reality is that Ormandy at that time had an incredible record of producing some hot records and winning
a hit maker.
Yeah, and winning awards. So I mean, it would have been silly probably to ignore his advice. Obviously he was doing something right,
plus he was in the market
exactly so. Yeah, absolutely right. And so, you know, that was an important relationship between the two of them, and so, you know, we have this beautiful sort of first movement. The second movement is sort of this waltz, and it's definitely not a Viennese waltz. It's sort of this comparison of the Viennese waltz versus the Russian waltz. So what's the difference? You know, Viennese waltz is a little lighter. It has maybe a little more lilt to it. It has a little more step, a little more lift.
Bounce.
Yeah. To where the Russian waltz is a little more squared out, but it doesn't mean unmusical or anything. It's just a little more rigid, a little more definitive on those last two beats. So instead of a 1-2-3-1-2-1-2-3-dun-dun-dun-dun, automatically it sort of sounds Russian, right?
Yeah.
Instead of a yep up up beep up, like
sort
you'd hear
a little
in Vienna.
Marchy,
right? Yeah, but that second and third beat is a little more present, and you'll hear that in this sort of grotesque and very strange second movement. You know, it sort of lives in an unusual, mysterious world, and rightly so, because what, he was going to name it Twilight, so there is some mystery right around that time. And then the third movement is just an incredible movement where he brings in one of his favorite again traditional chants, the Dies Irae, which we know from composers like Liszt, and Rachmaninoff used it several times, Paganini, and we heard it a couple of years ago with Mackenzie Melamed in the Totentanz by Liszt. That
Wendy Carlos for The Shining.
There you go. Yeah, glad you're here to bring in those those points. but yeah, all of that kind of that chant, that you know, the wrath, that death aspect coming in. There's a big controversy whether Rachmaninoff knew this was his last. Well, we continue to listen to this movement, and all of a sudden we have this theme of hymn of praise, a hymn of celebration, which actually marks the resurrection. So in this last movement, he first has death, and then the last few minutes of the movement, you hear this hallelujah theme, which he actually writes in the score, hallelujah.
Huh.
And so it's, I don't know. I tend to think that he did absolutely know this was his last work. And what an incredible work it is.
All right. We'll hear movements 2 and 3, or Twilight and Midnight from Sergei Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances.
We'll be right back.